Welcome to SCOTUS Cast. On May 19th, the Supreme Court decided United States v. Williams. The court ruled that Section 2252A, A3B of Title 18 U.S.C., which prohibits knowingly advertising, promoting, presenting, distributing, or soliciting material in a manner that reflects a belief or is intended to cause another to believe that the material is illegal child pornography, is not overly broad or impermissibly vague and thus is not facially unconstitutional. Elizabeth Harmer Dion, the John M. Olin Fellow in Law at Harvard Law School, discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Dion.
On May 19th, the Supreme Court issued its much-anticipated opinion in United States v. Williams. The court upheld both Williams' conviction for pandering child pornography and the PROTECT Act, the federal statute which outlaws such pandering. The facts in the Williams case are not pretty. Facts in child pornography cases rarely are. In 2004, Michael Williams offered to provide sexually explicit photographs of his toddler-aged daughter to an undercover Secret Service agent. Williams also claimed to have hardcore photographs of him and other men violating his 4-year-old daughter. To prove his bona fides, William uploaded multiple images of child pornography into a public portion of an internet chat room. William's home computer contained additional images of prepubescent minors engaged in sexually explicit and sadomasochistic conduct. Williams was convicted of both pandering and possession of child pornography in violation of the PROTECT Act. Williams appealed his pandering conviction on the grounds that the PROTECT Act is overbroad and vague and thus facially unconstitutional. The Act prohibits the transmittal, receipt, distribution, reproduction, and possession of child pornography. These provisions are not controversial. However, the 11th Circuit took issue with the so-called pandering provision, which criminalizes the offer or solicitation of child pornography, regardless of whether or not pornography actually exists. Because mere talk about exchanging child pornography results in criminal liability, the Act criminalizes some types of speech. Thus, the 11th Circuit felt that the Act violated the First Amendment and struck the pandering portion of the Act. The 11th Circuit completely missed the linguistic concept of a performative, speech that is integral to an action. Criminal performative includes solicitation, incitement, or conspiracy to commit a crime, aiding and abetting, bribery, antitrust activities, segregation, and unlawful discrimination. Each of these actions may be prohibited or prosecuted on the basis of speech alone. A proposed exchange of child pornography falls squarely into this category of unprotected criminal speech. Thus, the 11th Circuit erred in claiming the government could not outlaw mere speech. It does so all the time. With the blessing of the Supreme Court, and likely the overwhelming majority of the voting public. As the court stated in United States v. Freeman, where speech becomes an integral part of the crime, a First Amendment defense is foreclosed, even if the prosecution rests on words alone. To be fair, the 11th Circuit was most concerned about braggarts, exaggerators, and outright liars, quasi-innocents who never intended to exchange child pornography. Such speakers may not even possess child pornography, but they could become entangled in the statute's tentacles. However, the 11th Circuit misread the statute. The statute's scienter requirement probably would protect at least braggarts and exaggerators from prosecution. Outright liars are another matter, but there is scant First Amendment protection for fraud, particularly when it concerns an illegal product such as child pornography. The 11th Circuit also wished to protect the sanctity of belief, including the deluded belief that one has child pornography when one really does not. Again, the 11th Circuit misunderstood the statute. The poor moron loading over his DVD of Snow White under the titillating delusion that he possesses child pornography is completely safe, both in his belief and his possession. No one will bother him. Criminal liability attaches only if he claims to possess child pornography and then enters into an illegal conspiracy to provide that child pornography to someone else. The court's opinion is succinct, closely reasoned, and verbally precise. It answers and overrules every objection raised by the 11th Circuit, accepting the narrow interpretation of the statute offered by the Solicitor General in the petitioner's brief. In summary, the court found that the PROTECT Act contains a comprehensive scienter requirement and a reasonable person standard, both of which protect innocent speakers. Because the statute attacks only criminal conspiracy, it does not infringe on First Amendment advocacy of child pornography. The ultimate holding in Williams is clear. In sum, we hold that offers to provide or requests to obtain child pornography are categorically excluded from the First Amendment. In other words, pandering child pornography is unprotected speech. It is significant that six justices joined Justice Scalia in the court's opinion, including four, Stevens, Kennedy, Thomas, and Breyer, who voted in 2002 in Ashcroft versus Free Speech Coalition to overturn the Child Pornography Prevention Act, Congress's first attempt to outlaw pandering. The court found that this second anti-pandering statute passes constitutional muster. This court held unconstitutional Congress's previous attempt to meet this new threat, and Congress responded with a carefully crafted attempt to eliminate the First Amendment problems we identified. As far as the provision at issue in this case is concerned, that effort was successful. In dissent, Justice Souter, joined by Justice Ginsburg, boxed at the criminal liability of the braggarts, exaggerators, outright liars, and deluded morons who run afoul of the pandering provision without actually possessing child pornography. But there is a vast safe harbor for these folks. If they will practice truth in advertising, they can exercise their speech rights from now until the inferno. Offers to provide or solicitations of virtual child pornography are not a criminal offense, as long as vendors identify the material as virtual. At this point, we bump into a market reality that none of the opinions fully address. Virtual child pornography is neither as lucrative nor as titillating as the real thing. Hence, advertising it as fake kills the market. Despite the erudite defenses of fantasy promulgated by certain First Amendment scholars, pornography consumers aren't interested in fantasy. They want the real thing. It is much more exciting to know that an actual child is being violated at the other end of the camera. The 11th Circuit acknowledged the pervasive problem of the child pornography market and even provided some chilling examples. The most disturbing of these were the KittyPix and KittyVids websites shut down in 2006, which streamed video of live molestations of children as young as 18 months old. Children's advocates, parents, and decent and rational citizens everywhere have cause for celebration in Williams. It is indeed a momentous decision. Since 1988, Congress has tried to protect children from electronic media. Free speech absolutists, with ample assistance from the Supreme Court, have stymied such protection at every turn. With the PROTECT Act, Congress has finally succeeded in protecting children, at least in one small corner of the electronic universe. However, children's advocates are still losing the ideological battle. The pornography industry has so successfully defined its product as speech that a common-sense statute to protect children requires the blessing of the Supreme Court before taking full effect. Perhaps Williams marks a turning point in First Amendment jurisprudence, but I suspect there will be many more Supreme Court battles before we know its long-term ramifications. I humbly suggest that we must continue to question whether any child pornography qualifies as speech.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.